Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who, like me, know that there's something dreadfully wrong, destructive, about the religious and political institutions, the media reporting and military invasions, the economic schemes that are being presented as the solution to our problems, they are in fact the problem. We cannot resolve this issue by simply rearranging the deck chairs on our Titanic of state. So instead of merely presenting the news and rooting for one side over the other, our mission is to understand what is causing the tragedies, who is besieging our planet, why are they doing it, and how will their actions influence our world over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. And that is why in the second hour, we're going to provide hope, because there is hope. It is in the terms and conditions of the covenant and its benefits. So we're going to engage God on His terms, which are evidence and reason. If you'd like to participate in this discussion at any time over the next hour, and in fact, 2 hours as we move into the Torah, our number is 877-300-7645. I'd like to begin with a flippant statement that the new pope made while he was visiting a mine in an Italian town. The pope, who later celebrated Mass, which is a pagan rite, by the way, if you participate in Mass, then you're doing what the Babylonians did. There is no call for Mass in anything Yahweh or Yahusha say. In fact, they strongly encourage us to not copy the ways of the Gentiles, which is what Mass represents. The Eucharist is a holy pagan rite. It has absolutely no association of any kind, nor does communion with Yahusha or with Yahweh or with your salvation or with a relationship with God. The context of the Last Supper that Yahusha ate has nothing to do with the Last Supper. It had all to do with celebrating Passover. He was celebrating Passover, and when you eat the unleavened bread and drink the wine that is associated with Passover, then you know what he did. Outside of Passover, it is nothing but a pagan rite. Anyway, he was celebrating Mass, of course, for 300,000 people outside of the city's cathedral, and he says, "We don't want this globalized economic system, which does us so much harm. Men and women have to be at the center of an economic system as God wants, not money." Now, it's been my assessment that this pope is clearly the dumbest that Roman Catholics have elected in a very, very long time. Now, there's no penalty with not being very smart. You know, it happens. However, you should not elect the dumbest and the dullest tool in your drawer to run your organization. Money is one of the levers that makes economies go. You know, to build an economy, you have essentially four ingredients. The single most important ingredient is freedom combined with trust. The ability to exercise free will, your own individual ability to do what you personally want to do. So that ingredient is always missing in a communist society, which is what Italy has become, which is why there's such poverty in Italy. So the first aspect is you have to be individually able to do what you want to do. And with that, individually responsible, which is what has driven so many economies around the world into the gutter, because they don't want individuals to be responsible. They want the government to be responsible and individuals to depend on the government. The second aspect tied to that is trust. You have to be in a system where the individual knows that if they work hard and if what they do prevails, that they will receive the benefit of their efforts. In a communist system, they're guaranteed that they will not receive the benefit of their efforts, because no matter what you produce, it goes to the collective whole. well, then there's no incentive to do anything. What communist systems all fail. If you're going to have a system that's going to work, the rule of law has to be that the individual who is investing their labor, their energy, their capital, has to have some assurance that they will enjoy the benefits of their labor. Otherwise, there's no reason to do so. So free will, which does not exist in a system where men and women are at the center. And the second is the opportunity to through trust to know that what you earn will not be confiscated. The other ingredients to a productive economy is the investment of capital. If you are not able to freely invest capital, if capital is restrained, the economy fails. Capital is a tool. And so by saying that God does not want money to be at the center of his economics is to say that that God is a nincompoop along with the Pope and hasn't got any idea what the purpose of money is. God doesn't want your money. There is no place where God says, give me your money. What he wants us to do is to use money so that we can be productive. He doesn't want our money, but in the world of men, for us to be productive, we need to know how to use money. And the moment you start taking money away from those who have been productive, the moment you have governments borrowing enormous amounts of money competing with the free markets, then the whole system falls apart. Understanding the nature of money. And, you know, one of the things that God's really keen about is weights and measures. Don't cheat in the weights and measures. What originally money was based upon gold. There was no such thing as fiat money. Fiat money is an experiment that is really quite new, and it's disastrous. Fiat money is money based upon debt, so that your currency is not an asset, it's a liability. But in most of human history, money was gold or a certificate that was tied to gold. And what God says is don't cheat. But that's exactly what every government in the world has done. By borrowing money and by inflating their currency so that they don't go bankrupt as they borrow more than they can afford, they have cheated the system. They have cheated in the weights and balances. That's what the Fed does for the United States. That's why a dollar today is worth only 2% of what it was worth in the 1913 era when the Fed and the progressive income tax were established. So that is the role of money. And then you have labor. And labor can be a combination of a variety of different things, but the more controlled labor is, the less productive it is. The more controlled the people are through fascist and communist kinds of systems, where people become the focus, as this Pope wants, the more controlled the people are, the more like they, more akin they are to what occurred in Europe when the church was solely in charge of Europe. They were serfs. They become less productive. You know, one of the things that was found in the Soviet Union and then found in communist China is that as a whole, the collective system, when land was owned by the state and people were forced to work it, that they were incapable of producing even 20% of the food that was required by the society as a whole. But when those societies gave individuals the opportunity to till very small plots of land, the areas around their apartments, if you will, that individuals just tilling a tiny percentage of land were able to produce the necessary food for vast quantities of people. Individual contribution, individual hope. And so it is communism, this socialism, this control by an institution like Roman Catholicism that causes the problem. It's not the solution. you know, the next part of any economic system is then the means to production, which apart from labor, which we've just discussed, and money, which we've discussed, are things like land and machinery. And in this regard, you have to know how all of those things come together to create the opportunity for prosperity. And very seldom do countries have business individuals, businessmen and women, at the helm of their legislatures or executive branch, and as a result, they continue to do what America has done, continue to pass laws that are counterproductive to the best interest of the people. That is what is here. This is this Pope doing the same thing that the President of the United States is currently doing, creating class warfare, creating this concept of that there's this caste of people that have become rich because they have abused the masses, and that the masses have the right, the 99% have the right to take what they have earned as their own. But when you do such a thing, everything is destroyed. The individuals who receive the money are destroyed. The individuals who the money is taken from are destroyed, and you have total chaos. Now, by the way, God never said such a thing that money should not be the center of economics. He just said, Yosha said, if we have him quoted correctly, that the love of money is the root of evil. And, you know, that if your primary goal in life is simply the absolute love of wealth, then if it's tangible wealth as opposed to the one kind of riches that matter, which is the riches that we inherit by becoming members of the covenant, becoming covenant children, then you're going to squander your life, and you're going to make lots of choices that are counterproductive. But this idea that people are the center of an economic system, as this Pope has opined, not true. What he's talking about there, as I said, is communism. It's the very thing that has encroached upon the Italian economy that has crippled and impoverished the people. We will return to the Pope's next line, the world has become an idolater of this God money, when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the words of the current Pope. He was in a mine in Italy and made the statement that we don't want this globalized economic system, which does so much harm. Men and women have to be at the center, as God wants, not money. It's kind of a strange statement to make for an institution that has confiscated more money over its lifetime than probably any other ever conceived by humanity. When we talked about the fact that God never said such a thing, and what he is proposing is essentially communism, well, his next statement was as follows. The world has become an idolater of this God called money. Well, the fact is that no human institution in world history has a longer history of greed than the Roman Catholic Church. So perhaps this Pope should read the Church's history, particularly in the Americas. I mean, didn't he come from Argentina? Doesn't he know the history of the conquistadors and the fact that they slaughtered entire civilizations? The Incas, the Aztecs, for example, for a singular purpose, gold. Bringing it back to cleric and king. Has he never read anything about the indulgences where the Roman Catholic Church were willing to say, oh yeah, you're absolved if you're only willing to give us sufficient money? Does he know that for most of its history, the papacy was purchased, sold to the highest bidder? Does he not know his own history? Here's a brief history of Roman Catholicism. It begins by saying it's impossible to calculate the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church. In truth, the Church itself likely could not answer that question, even if it wished to. Its investments and spending are kept secret. Its real estate and art have not been evaluated, such as even if the Church would want to sell them. There is no doubt, however, that between the Church's priceless art, its land, its gold, and its investments around the globe, that it is one of the wealthiest institutions on the planet. Since 1313 AD, when Roman Catholicism became the official religion of the Roman Empire, its power has been in near constant growth. The Church was able to acquire land, most notably the papal states surrounding Rome, convert pagan temples, and claim relics for itself. Over 300 years, it became one of Europe's wealthiest landowners. For the next 1,000 years, tithes and tributes flowed from all over Europe. Non-Christians, even fellow Christians, were killed and their property was confiscated during this time. For example, the Fourth Crusade, the sack of Constantinople in the 13th century, brought it gold, money, and jewels. Here's another article that says, "Are you Catholic? Maybe you'd be wondering how much is the Catholic Church worth." Well, I found an interesting article, this one says. Well, the article is a report of from the Vatican. This one happens to be in 2001. The Vatican doesn't very often disclose anything about its financial holdings. It keeps that very close to the vest. It's, in fact, it wasn't until this year that the Church even considered putting out a financial report of the Vatican's church, the Vatican's bank. This was dated July 6, 2001. Here is the presentation that was made this morning on the economic report for the Holy See for the year 2000. Cardinal Sergio Sebastiani, president of the Prefecture for Economic Affairs for the Holy See, made the presentation at a press conference. It began. "For the 8th consecutive year, the opening statement for the fiscal year 2000 for the Holy See's closes with a net gain of $17.7 billion. This end of the year, the total expenses were $404 billion, and the total income was $422 billion. Compared with the previous year, the income was more substantial, having increased by $64 billion. Now, mind you, this is strictly a report of liquid invested assets. This is not an appreciation of the real estate holdings, of their art holdings. This has nothing to do with their treasure they have in gold. This is not the value of their buildings. This is just the money that is liquid and managed in terms of investments. This is their ownership of corporations around the world. They're the largest trader, for example, in Italian public securities. So this is just the increase in their invested capital. And yet this Pope would have you believe that he is an ambassador for the poor, and that his church has not turned money into its God? I think not. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Moving from Pope to Pope, we have a news release today that Pope Benedict, this would be Cardinal Ratzinger. Cardinal Ratzinger made a written comment, his first written comment on the abuse of children, the pedophilia scandal by Roman Catholic priests that took place while he, for more than a decade, was head of the Congregation for Church Doctrine. The branch of the Roman Catholic Church that he had supreme control over put him as the second most powerful person in the Vatican to the Pope himself, which was John Paul II at the time. There's only one place where he and John Paul II differed, and that was that when the Roman Catholic Church began its long swoon in terms of revenue and of priests enrolling in the priesthood, became ordained. There was a fellow, Marcial in Mexico, that supplied a disproportionate number of young priests to the Roman Catholic Church and was raising billions upon billions of dollars because he had a cult following. But he was abusive in church doctrine in about every, in just civil nature in about every possible way. He was bisexual, and his proclivity was for young priest candidates. And so his pedophilia was for boys in their teenage years. He wasn't quite as bad as some popes where they prey on them as young as 8, 9, 10 years old. His interest was for teenage boys. He had a number of prostitutes as part of his harem. Fathered a number of children, was a major drug consumer. We have no indication that he was a drug wholesaler, but he loved recreational drugs. And John Paul II was a big fan of Marcial Marcier and his Legion of Christ because of the enormous wealth and the source of new priests. And because of his known indulgences, let's call them, Cardinal Ratzinger was opposed. Said, you know, you really ought not be so close to this man. You ought need, yeah, I understand you want to take his priest. I understand you want to take his money. But you really need to be careful here because this is going to blow up in your face. And of course, it didn't with Roman Catholicism because they sweep everything under the rug. But other than that, everything that Ratzinger did during the entire time that he was head of the Gestapo of Roman Catholicism was to tell every Roman Catholic, in fact, have them swear an oath and sign a document that said there was a sin far graver than this moral crime of grown men abusing young children. And that unforgivable crime was divulging the fact that Roman Catholic priests were abusing young children. That's where he drove his stake into the ground. That was his red line drawn into the sand, was that one crime that was far more grievous than perpetrating pedophilia was allowing the outside world to know that the Roman Catholic Church was guilty of pedophilia. It's why the Roman Catholic scandal in the Diocese of Los Angeles, whereby the victim said, we'll take a lot less money if the Roman Catholic Church is forced to disgorge the internal documentations which show the cover-up. And so when those documents were published, and we reported many of them on this program, it was within 2 weeks of that the Pope resigned. And so the problem is that those documents show that he himself was actively involved in covering up priestly pedophilia. So what does he write? Because, you know, to be a Roman Catholic Pope, you first and foremost have to be a liar. He said in comments that he came via an Italian author and mathematician who was writing a book on the problems facing the Roman Catholic Church. This was Pope Benedict's, Ratzinger's, response. As far as you mentioning the moral abuse of minors by priests, I can only, as you know, acknowledge it with profound consternation. But I never tried to cover up these things. Benedict, who now holds the title of Emeritus Pope, said. Now, he spent better part of 15 years doing very little more, very little else than covering up priestly pedophilia. It's why he resigned. There's another statement on the Pope. This from Francis. This is today. He urged countries to welcome and respect migrants and refugees and not treat them as pawns on a chessboard of humanity. Now, he is speaking primarily, of course, to European nations who have for now 20 years just opened their borders to primarily Muslims. Now, the Muslims have come into Europe because there is no economic opportunity in any Islamic country. In an Islamic country, because they do not have freedom, there is no expression of free will in an Islamic country. Islam means submission. Because there is no trust that what you earn you'll be able to keep, because they're all dictatorships of one type or another. Because there is just no incentive, there is no economic opportunity in these countries, and so Muslims have been immigrating. Now, the problem is that, and I don't, by the way, have any problem with people immigrating from one country to another, but if you choose to leave one country because you have no opportunity, then you really ought to embrace the culture of the country that has provided you with a better opportunity. But Muslims don't do that for the most part. Now, there's always exceptions. But for the most part, Muslims congregate as Muslims, and they try to bring the culture that caused them to have no opportunity with them. And that is a problem. And that's the problem that exists now in Sweden with the riots, in France with the murders and the riots, in downtown London with the poverty. So what this Pope is just not aware of and not thinking through is that there is a reason that the Muslims are leaving their country, which is that their religion has stifled economic opportunity, just like the Roman Catholic Church did when it was charged with Europe for better part of 1,000 years. Migrants, he says, and refugees are not pawns on the chessboard of humanity. And then he said, they are children, they are women, they are men who leave or are forced to leave their homes for various reasons, who share a legitimate desire for knowing and having, but above all else, being more. You know, the rhetoric sounds fine until you realize the reason that they're forced to leave their countries is because Islam is vicious. Because in an Islamic country, a woman who is raped, she is the one that goes to jail, not the perpetrator. Because thievery is considered good in Islam. Because lying is considered good in Islam. And so there is no economic opportunity. The problem is the religion. And the immigrants bring that religion with them, which is caustic to the countries they immigrate to. So he's just not thinking these things through. It's like his thought process can rise to the level of about a third grader, and it can't process the real issue, the real problem. He then repeated several times that there is slave labor and trafficking developing based upon a throwaway culture. Well, the only place that slave labor is practiced today is in Islamic countries. Now, there's a few pockets, I'm sure, here and there, and there were certainly pockets in communist countries, in their prisons. But slavery is primarily an outgrowth of Islam. Even America's slavery emanated to a large degree because of Muslims and their influence over northwestern Africa. Slavery is a big part of Islam because Muhammad was a slave trader. And so once again, he does not understand the culture, the religious environment from which these people come, and why they were slaves and are now looking for freedom, and doesn't understand the means to freedom. Well, we have another idiot. This one not a religious idiot, but a political idiot. Senator John McClown, you recall him. He's the one that said Allahu Akbar was saying the same thing as thank God for a Christian. Yes, that idiot, the same idiot that quoted the now disgraced, we'll put in air quotes, scholar, who was the source of his information that the majority of the rebels were not jihadists, but instead they were just freedom fighters. Well, he quoted her, but when it was found that she was a complete and utter fraud and that she was actually being paid by jihadists themselves, never apologized for that, never apologized for being wrong on Allahu Akbar. Well, Senator John McClown didn't like the fact that Putin, who's his arch enemy, that Putin wrote a letter to the American people and published it in the New York Times. And that Putin's letter to the American people was almost universally accurate. It was profound. That's why we spent several programs, I think three, just on that letter. Well, Senator McClown didn't like it. So he decided that tit for tat, I'm going to write a letter and I'm going to have it published in a Russian newspaper. So he, in his letter, which was printed, by the way, in Pravda, which was the old mouthpiece for the Soviet Union for communism back in the day. Pravda is almost never read now in Russia, so it's not like that he got his article published in the Russian version of the New York Times. No, he went to the old communist rag, Pravda. And we'll discuss what John McClown had to say in his article published by Pravda. I think you will find, as I did, that John needs a mirror and maybe a pair of spectacles. His vision, particularly near sight, isn't so good. Turning to Shattering Mist, we're considering the letter that Senator John McClown wrote to be tit for tat with the brilliant thesis that President Vladimir Putin wrote to Americans' governance and to the people of America, which was extraordinarily insightful. Now, I'm willing to admit that that old Putin is living in a glass house, that he has been guilty of many of the things that he is accusing America of. But everything he is accusing America of, he's right. It's just that he himself is also guilty of those things. So here is old McCain's comments. He says, Putin is not enhancing Russia's global reputation. Well, in actuality, he is. This move that he made recently to avoid what might well have led to World War III with the United States warring against Russia's ally and engaging in the civil war in Syria may well have prevented World War III, and the world knows it. I mean, almost everyone around the world is just saying, wow, what a move. So the opposite of what McClown is saying here is true. Putin has elevated, and everyone with a half wit knows this, that Putin has radically elevated Russia's prestige around the world, particularly as it relates to this move of destroying Syria's chemical and biological weapons. The next second is he says he is destroying it. No, the opposite is true. You know, if you're going to be credible, Mr. McClown, you really can't make statements like that. You can't say that he's not enhancing Russia's global reputation when the opposite is true. You can't say that Allahu Akbar is the same as thank God when the opposite is true. You can't say that the Syrian opposition is mostly moderate freedom fighters when they are ruthless, fundamentalist Islamic jihadists when the opposite is true. He has, McClown writes, made Russia a friend to tyrants and an enemy to the oppressed and untrusted by nations that seek to build a safer, more peaceful, and prosperous world. Well, actually, the nation who has befriended tyrants, so that they can oppress is the United States. No, we are the primary weapons supplier to tyrants around the world. You know, it's well, the problem here is that McClellan is able to see afar, but he can't see close up. And the realization is that he's just trying to pick on Putin for his support of Bashar al-Assad. But anyone who is actually aware of who is fighting whom and why in Syria recognizes that the lesser of two evils is Assad. And that's hard to say, but it's the truth. And that the rebels have and will continue to kill the Christian population indiscriminately. And that the rebels are imported jihadists from around the globe that are armed to the teeth with American weapons by way of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. That America has turned Syria into a killing field. Not Russia. He then said that if it wasn't for Russia, the world would be more peaceful and prosperous. But who's the nation who has engaged in, what now, 15 conflicts around the world, meddling in world affairs, trying to nation build in 60 years? It's the United States, not Russia. Now, this is the next comment in this article. It says, Pravda RU considers itself a successor to the Soviet-era Communist Party newspaper. And like the newspaper, which still exists, it has a very limited readership. President Putin, McClellan said, and his associates don't respect your dignity or accept your authority over them. They punish dissent and imprison opponents. They rig your elections. They control your media, McCain wrote. Boy, this boy needs a pair of glasses. Is he aware of what the NSA prison program is all about? How the U.S. government has robbed Americans of their privacy? Is he aware that America is the largest prison nation in the world, imprisoned more of its population than any other nation by a huge margin? Boy, we have become blind to our own faults.